This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. Well, happy holidays. We are now into December in 2015, and I'm hoping that all of you are booked and doing a lot of shows, and perhaps you're listening to this podcast as you're going to or returning from a show. I hope that everyone's calendars are filled and that you're doing a lot of great work and spreading some joy, happiness, and magic to the rest of the world. And if you're looking for some way to help spread some joy or perhaps to give a gift for someone, you might consider giving a gift to yourself also. I think that you're important and you've been working hard all this year, particularly during this holiday season. Perhaps you've got a few more shows, which puts a little bit of extra change in your pocket. If you're looking to reward yourself with something, you might think about perhaps, maybe being a friend of the Magic Word and donating financially to the Magic Word by going to patreon.com/themagicword, where you can make a financial pledge to the Magic Word on an ongoing basis. Or if you want to make just a one-time end-of-the-year donation, that's perfectly acceptable too, and we certainly would appreciate that. And you can do that through PayPal, and you can go to themagicwordpodcast.com, and there's a place up in the top left-hand corner over there where that you can click on the Donate Now button, and you can go through PayPal and leave your donation there and become a friend of the Magic Word. What a way to celebrate the holiday by giving to something that you really enjoy and will give you joy into the next new year as well. Well, speaking of joy, we happen to have had an extra abundance of joy about a week or so ago when we had Gazzo as a guest here on The Magic Word. We had a lot of downloads of that particular podcast, showing me that a lot of you certainly enjoyed what he had to say. Well, I got two for one because, as it happened, he brought his wife with him, who was Billy Kidd. And Billy was a judge on The Wizard Wars, which was a television show here in the U.S. that featured Penn and Teller, among some other people. These magicians, actually, she had performed in the first season, and in the second season, she had replaced Angela Funovitz, who was one of the wizards, or judges. Well, they weren't really a judge, I guess. Actually, they were just one of the wizards, because Penn and Teller were part of the judging team, and then people who had advanced into the second round would compete against the wizards, which included Shimshi, Gregory Wilson, Justin Flom, and, of course, Billy Kidd. And they had to come up with ideas using the same props that the semifinalists. And if the semifinalists were able to defeat the wizards, then they could win a $10,000 prize. If they lost, then the wizards were the winners. I don't know if they got to keep the money or not, but, well, anyhow, perhaps we'll see in this conversation. Another thing that's interesting, of course, is that Billy Kidd is a female, and so we talk about how she got involved in magic and some of the pitfalls that we as male magicians should watch out for when we're trying to encourage women, and particularly younger girls, when they come to our club meetings, to make sure that they are not discouraged from continuing on into becoming a magician and enjoying everything that it has to offer. Well, enough of me. Let's hear now from Billy Kidd here on The Magic Word. Hello, this is Scott Wells for TheMagicWordPodcast.com. And joining me on the podcast today, I have something I don't have very often. Typically, we have male magicians, and now I've got a female magician, Billy Kidd. Hey there, Billy.
Hello, how are you?
Well, I'm fantastic. I'm glad that you're here and joining us. And I said I really don't see a lot of female magicians. Trixie Bond is a good friend, and she's been on the podcast from time to time. But I can pretty much count on two hands the number of women magicians we see in magic. Why do you think that is?
That is a good question.
And well, thank you.
I wish I had the answer, but unfortunately I don't. And it's one of those weird things. When I got into magic, I had no idea that there was no women in it. It wasn't even something that crossed my mind until you realize you're the only girl at the club, or people just kind of give you the funny, weird look, like, who are you? And I think you realize that quite quickly. I think why there might not be a lot of female magicians today, or even in the history of magic. For myself, I think it comes down to maybe exposure initially.
Hmm.
My first trick I saw and first magician I saw, I was like, well, after university, I was like 21, I had a career. Mm-hmm. And then I saw a magician, I was like, oh my God, I'm in the wrong career.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. So, but I, knowing myself really well, as because it's me and I know what I can do.
Well, good.
I kind of swear to this day, if I would have been exposed to magic as a child, I'm pretty sure I would have gotten into magic right away back then.
You would have pursued it a whole lot earlier.
Yeah, but I don't. So for me, it's one of those kind of, I think, exposure thing, definitely. And also, you know, you talk to other magicians, and usually their first insight into magic is, oh, they got a magic kit when they were a kid, or if they've seen another magician.
Traditional.
But you don't really hear a lot of young girls who are like, yeah, I got this magic kit when I was 10, 12 years old, and that was that. So I think exposure has a lot to do with
it. Well, even later in life, whenever you're 21, to have somebody who had influenced you that much to want to pursue that as a career, certainly. And after 21, do you remember who it was that you saw?
Yeah, it was a street magician named Nick Nicholas. He was performing at a street festival in my hometown in Canada, and that was that.
Wow. You hadn't seen a magician before, or if you had, it just didn't register?
No,
or...
I'd never seen anything.
Well, what was it he did in particular that just, like, blew you away?
A number of things. He was performing the cups and balls, and that, first of all, I was like, how, what, where, and why, and just, you know, just being a layperson watching magic, that effect was quite strong on me. And the other thing I really liked about what I saw and experienced was, because he was a street performer, I loved the idea and the atmosphere that, you know, a street magician or a street performer in general created out of nothing. You know, they created a little piece of theater.
Their own stage, basically.
Exactly, in the middle of the street. And
stopped traffic, made their own audience.
Yeah, and I was just completely mesmerized. And luckily, he was doing two festivals in my city. He was there for like 2 months. And I think I saw every single show and gave him like at least $10 for every show because I just got super obsessed.
Yeah. And was it the magic that impressed you, or was it his presentation? I mean, in other words, you were obviously mystified by it, but was it the way that he presented it? Was it the magic itself? Was it just the whole thing where he was drawing the crowd and had an audience, and how that he created something from nothing, or what was it?
All of the above.
Okay, I thought
all of the above. But I think in that moment, more specifically, it was the magic that I was hooked onto.
Well, once again, because you were not looking at yourself as being male or female, you're looking at yourself as a magician, as you should, you know?
Yeah.
And I have heard it said before that one of the reasons there are not as many women in magic is because they don't have pockets.
That is so true. It sucks. In fact, for any listeners, if you're a girl, it sucks. It's horrible. It's... Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So do you make pockets? I mean, do you wear jeans? Do you change
I don't like sewing. I hate sewing, so that's out of the question. So I always have to find someone or hire someone. It's quite annoying because even today, a lot of tricks are invented for men without even thinking about the pocket situation.
That's
true. I only learned a couple of years ago that women's buttons on the shirts go the opposite way.
Yeah, that's right.
So that affects things if you're right or left-handed, so which they don't tell you this when you're looking at certain routines, and so that really, really sucks. As far as, oh, there's this new thing out there, maybe I want to try that. Okay, that doesn't work. Even like rings don't fit my hands. I got quite small hands, so that's always an obstacle. But I think the advantage of it, and looking at all the other, I guess, female magicians in the industry who are working today, is I believe we're all so very different from each other, and not really by choice, but I think because we kind of have to be, because there is no other influences, if that makes sense. Like, I've not seen a lot of other female magicians performing in real life, so I don't really know what they do or what their style is. But if you look at the few of us that are out there, I think we're all very different in our own way, because there's no one to copy from.
So
we have to kind of discover ourselves and what kind of magic we like to do on our own, which I think is an advantage. I think if I was a guy, that'd be completely different. I'd probably be like everybody
else. That's true, because you see so many male magicians as clones, and it depends on who's popular of the day. It's kind of when it was Lance Burton, Doug Henning, that people were dressing like him with longer hair or whatever, and then with Lance Burton that they wanted to do the doves and be that classic style, and then it was David Blaine or Chris Angel.
Illusionist, you know. You know, I watch Illusionists, and you can always taste this little flavor of Copperfield in their performance, or just whatever that is that influences. You can see it. But I think, I can only speak for myself. But for me, there is no one that I can even just subconsciously kind of imitate or copy. So it's an advantage because I have to find my own style.
I think that's the case. There was a magician who used to write a column for a magazine and lived in the East Coast, I want to say like South Carolina or someplace, and he would have to create his own magic because there were no magicians around the area. And as a result, he had a very creative mind and really some good stuff because there were no people, as I said, not only to, this was well before the internet, that he would have to come up with ideas. And if he would want to confer with someone, he'd have to write a letter and wait till they wrote back. Or he could talk to him on the phone, obviously, or whatever. But the point is that if you have no role model or someone to copy from, then you're more likely to be your own person. That's why I was saying that you have these clones of whoever is going to be the popular magician du jour. Whereas with women, that there are not a lot of women magician role models to copy from. So there's not going to be someone else. There might be some people who won't now be a Billy Kidd, or might be Luna Shamada or Suzanne or several others who are out there. But again, there are only just a handful.
For and I think girls. That's an advantage totally. Like I know that when I'm picking my routines and what I want to do and how I present them, and it forces me to be more creative in that sense just because of that lack of role models, I guess. And so it's kind of a good thing in that sense. And, right. And hopefully that kind of continues. But at the same time, you know, I wish there were more female magicians just to even just jam with, just to go, do you have this issue? Because this is an issue. And yeah, and at the same time, you know, if I have people, you know, if I'm auditioning for something or whatnot, and people mm-hmm. going, oh, isn't that other girl your competition and all this? I'm like, not at all. I don't even look at it that way because
we're
so different. Yeah. We're so mm-hmm. different from each other.
Right. And so when you do hang out with other magicians and talk with them, that you don't have really some of the same things that you could relate to, I guess, whenever they're talking about certain things. Do you look at things a little bit differently from that standpoint? That it's like, well, I don't know if I, because with small hands, you won't be able to palm as well, perhaps, unless you use bridge-sized cards. I could be wrong, but...
Yeah, are you trying to make me cry right now?
No, please.
Yeah, no, it's different. I mean, I think when I got into magic, and even to this day, I still look at it from a different perspective. I come from a theater background, and mm-hmm. I used to work as an actor in Canada. So I think that was kind of the draw to it, seeing a street performer, because I used to be totally snobby with my theater colleagues, looking at all the street acts going, what are they doing here? You know, mm-hmm. why are they at this festival? This is a theater festival. Why is there street performers? And I never gave it the light of day until I saw this magician, and I was like, wow, wait a second, this is still theater, and this, he is creating, right. you know, this, the show and all that. So it kind of, yeah, it just kind of opened my eyes to a whole other world.
And so did you start performing street magic? Was that the first thing you started to do, or would you jump in?
When I think I saw this magician in like 2004, he was at this festival, and I didn't jump in right away. I had some magic books that I didn't understand, mm-hmm. and I had a career. I was working as an actor, so mm-hmm. you know, my focus wasn't on magic at all. But
in theater or in film, or?
Both. Every okay. yeah, mm-hmm. I did mostly theater and some television and mm-hmm. film, or what little we make in Canada. Mm-hmm. No, it was about. I think I went through like a depression for about 2 years, kind of going, oh my gosh, I have to quit. I have to quit my job somehow mm-hmm. and become a magician. How am I going to do that? And that was really. A really big decision, because since I was about 10 years old, all I've ever done was all my only job was in the theater, and that's all I knew and stuff, and mm-hmm. that was the only way I knew how to make money.
Right.
So instead of, like, unfortunately, I didn't have the, oh, I'm going to sit in my bedroom and practice, and then I'm going to try to become a professional or a semi-professional. I didn't do that, and I'm kind of glad I didn't do that. I just literally just quit. I just kind of told my colleagues, I'm going traveling, see you later. And I just made myself unavailable all the time, as opposed to going, I've actually quit, because I didn't know if I was going to work out as a magician.
So you kind of force yourself into it.
I forced myself into mm-hmm. it right away. Yeah. And
interesting.
And I knew, you know, starting would be, okay, no one knows me as a magician. Who's going to hire me? I'm going to go out in my hometown and just street perform mm-hmm. to learn how to perform magic. And I kind of just did that right away. And then it was Nick Nicholas who told me about a magician named Gazzo, and I'm like, who the hell is that? I have no idea. Mm-hmm. So just Google searched, and then Gaz took me under his wing, went to Key West, Florida, learned more about street performing there, mm-hmm. and still learning magic the whole time, and then moved to England, and just literally, in a way, almost overnight, turned into a magician. So my practice was working on the streets, mm-hmm. learning, you know, the sleights, learning how to perform, and things just kind of kept going.
Where do you
there.
Perform then now? Do you do a lot of street magic then currently?
I do, yeah, as much as I can. Mm-hmm. I mean, I work in all different types of venues. I do close-up you know, parlor stage. Mm-hmm. Me, a magician from Poland, and Gaz, we run a weekly magic theater in England right now. So it's like, it's very, not a huge stage, it's more like parlor. So that keeps us busy and it's just a place to play.
Where is that?
It's in Bath Spa. It's called Crowd Keepers Magic Theater.
Bath. Now, Bath Spa, that is Bath near Bristol? Is that
yeah, really close to Bristol,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm familiar with Smoke and Mirrors, which I think is...
Yes, that's in Bristol.
Okay, in Bristol, so you're nearby in Bath.
We're Bath, we're just okay. Next door.
And what's it called again?
It's called Crowd Keepers Magic Theater.
Okay.
And we do that, yeah, every single week, and there's also a close-up magic bar called Slight in our venue. So it's similar to the one in Bristol, but sure. Bath is a completely different audience.
Is that
owned
by the same guy? It seems like someone who'd opened that, it seems like it was in a college
in
area.
Bristol, it's the same guy, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But ours is completely independent from that. So.
And you guys own and operate that yourself?
Yeah.
Then? Okay.
So, mm-hmm. So yeah, I guess, I don't know, I kind of just perform wherever, anywhere,
mm-hmm.
wherever they're going to pay me, we'll be there.
Well, which brings me to Wizard Wars, in which that you were involved in performing and then later came on then as a judge. So how did you first decide that that's what you wanted to do, or did they contact you, or are you looking for a woman in particular?
I don't really know how they found me initially. I think I just remember getting a call from the producers mm-hmm. all quite a while ago, and we did some interviews. And there was actually some talk about me being a wizard initially mm-hmm. at the beginning. And then they filmed the pilot, which I didn't do. And then they asked, okay, do you want to come be a contestant? It was kind of like a very slow process. From my mind, it seemed like forever.
When did it start? I mean, this is 2015. We're sitting here.
I want to say it was in 2013 when I was when I was talking to.
Was it Rick Lacks you were talking to? At the
no,
time?
It was. It was. I think just some of the producers at the channel.
The television. Okay.
I think mm-hmm. they just seen some YouTube videos, and that's how they contacted me.
Oh, okay.
And then they asked if I could be a contestant on the show,
mm-hmm.
which was a bit tricky because I live in England and the show was filmed in LA, and so. I have to be honest, I was a bit scared because a show called Wizard Wars, I don't know, it didn't really intrigue me very much. I'm like, gosh, this sounds so cheesy.
Yeah.
I don't know if I want to be a part of this just because of the name. But, you know, you can't judge a book by its title. So right. I was like, well, who's involved? Who are the consultants? And they're mm-hmm. like, okay, we got Johnny Thompson and Dan White. And they were naming all these names going, those are people. I think a lot of people said yes because of who was involved. So it just made it seem like a safer environment to be a part of. Which is really important.
Mm-hmm.
So then I said yes, I'll come and be a contestant on the show.
They didn't pay for your flight over. I guess that was on you, pretty much. Or
I don't know if I'm allowed to say legally. Well, yes, they did. Everything was covered. Let's put it that
okay. And so then you came over, and those who may not have seen Wizard Wars from other countries, and even within the U.S. who may not have subscribed to that cable channel, they had two. People on each of two teams, that was the premise. You would explain exactly
what it was. You're teamed up with another magician who you may or may not know,
mm-hmm.
and you're given random props that you have to basically create a routine of magic with it,
mm-hmm.
and you go against another team of magicians who have exactly the same props, and you compete against each other.
Not unlike some of the things on Food Channel where that they have people that are competing. It's like, okay, you're going to make a muffin today. It's going to be made with bananas.
It's very similar to that, So... round one is you do your routine, and whoever wins that part of round one, you go to round two. Now, round two, basically, they give you completely different props. Same premise, you got to create a routine with it, but this time you're going up against the all-knowing wizards.
Okay.
And then if you win against the wizards, you win the prize money.
Which was $10,000.
Which was $10,000.
Is that each, or is that...
No, you had to share that.
Okay, so still $5,000 for each.
Yeah.
And as far as the props go, that you then, when I was watching that on television, that was in some magic shop or something that they...
That was all fake.
Okay.
So... Oh gosh, I could go on about this. So I'll tell you, I can speak from my experience. So they're like, here's your prop and here's your partner. And initially I was like, wow, it's not already difficult to create new magic like this with props that you don't even have in your hands to hold and touch. I knew initially the hardest part was going to be working with somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Only because I know magicians and what they're like, and magicians, most of us usually work solo.
Mm-hmm.
We usually always work by ourselves. So everyone has their own egos. No one knows how to listen to another person on stage.
Good point.
No one knows how to be generous and give or take. It's more just take because we're all solo performers in our own right. And that's, you know, that's just the flaw that we all have because magicians are only trained in sleight of hand. And then mm-hmm. what they do as far as their own personal shows are, for the most part, not everyone. So I knew that was going to be the hardest thing was, oh mm-hmm. my gosh, this could be working in my opinion, it could have been working like with amateur actors who mm-hmm. don't know anything about listening and sharing, just as far as performing on stage with someone else. So I knew that was going to be the hardest part, especially when you have no chemistry or relationship, and I didn't even know my partner, and we're like, I don't know, 8 hours apart. So that was, I think, the hardest part. So what we did...
And had you met... The other,
no.
Who was it you were
working with? So my first partner, it was episode 4 of the series.
The second season?
First season. I was a contestant initially. Okay. It was called Blown Away. I was with Leon Etienne from...
Yeah, from, well, France or England.
Yeah. No, you're thinking of...
I'm thinking of Etienne Pradier.
Not him. I was with Leon Etienne. He's from...
Oh, Leon Etienne. I'm sorry. Yes. Yeah. He's from Canada, I think.
No, he's not from Canada.
He's not.
He's from...
Wasn't he on
New
America's
York.
Got Talent?
He was, yes. Okay. He does a show with... It's called Leon on Rami.
Yes, I thought that he lived in Canada, but I guess he is maybe upstate New York. Okay.
Yeah, so we were teamed together. We had never met before. I instantly mm-hmm. Google searched him going, who is this guy? And I was like,
great. And he
probably
did the same thing.
Yeah, oh, totally. Of course we did. I was like, oh, this guy looks good. From his videos, I can tell he's a performer. He knows what's going on.
He's a nice fellow, yeah.
But the problem was he was on a cruise ship and I'm in London, so we can only Skype with each other when he had, you know, proper internet and if I was awake. So our process was basically through Skype going, okay, mm-hmm. these are our two routines. And the hard part was you have to create your second routine as if you're going to win, because when you film the episode, if you win round one, in 5 minutes you do your second routine.
Oh, right away. Okay.
Right away. So you're creating two completely different routines.
Well, how much time did you actually have to create that?
Well, okay, I it's hard to put that into a number, but I'll kind of give you an idea. So I'm in London, Leon's on a ship. They tell us what the props are, but we don't have them in our hands. So you're just using your imagination to create a routine. And they're like, okay, you're going to fly to LA. You get an hour in the workshop, which we're going to film mm-hmm. for behind the scenes stuff. We're like, okay, cool. Right. So I fly to LA, jet lag out of my mind. My first time meeting Leon, the hour in the workshop was a pretend workshop, all for camera.
Sure.
So all those workshop scenes you see in the show, that's
in a studio?
That's in a studio, and that was the first time I met Leon while we're doing this weird improv, trying to pretend like we know what we're doing. And that was it. That was the first time touching the props, and then after that hour, I'm on a plane back to London.
But are those props they gave you or props you had selected?
They gave us the props. We don't select any props.
Okay.
So it was all given to us. But that was the first time we got to hold anything in our hands.
Mm-hmm.
And literally, that was it. And then I'm back in London. He's on a cruise ship. And the next time we see each other is when we film.
And that was a week later?
About a week later, yeah. Okay. So we had a week to still kind of think of our ideas. But, you know, being a magician, if you don't have the prop in your hands, there's not really much you can do.
Right.
So... So a week later, I requested that I fly a day early because I was so jet lagged that initial time. I was like, I need an extra night just to kind of get into the time zone. So I flew it a little bit early and we're like, great, we're going to have a bit of extra time to get to know each other and work on this thing. But then Leon was stuck in Vancouver. And we're like, oh no, this is, you know, it was really intense. I would have to say it's probably the most stressful thing I've ever done in my life. Yeah.
Because of the time constraints.
Because of the time constraint.
Because they're bringing everybody together and paying
everyone's
teller,
together.
Everybody
and,
had to be there.
And we did have consultants, but you have to keep in mind the consultants were working for everybody, we didn't just have them for ourselves.
That's true, yeah.
And the builders, I mean, we had Don Wayne as a builder, we had a whole team, we had a great team, but the builders are working for everybody else.
But were these ideas yours, and I'm not talking about just for your particular segment, but when they had other magicians, were they the ideas or were they also the combined ideas of Giant Thompson and other guys and the builders and whatever? So
the builders just built.
And you would tell them what you wanted.
Yeah.
Okay, then.
But I mean, if put yourself in the builder situation, you've got, I don't know, 20, 30, 40 magicians going, this is what we want, this is what we need.
Yeah.
The next day, it could all be, no, that's changed now.
Yeah.
So that was kind of what the atmosphere was like for everybody. And, you know, working with producers who may not have worked with magicians before, going, oh my gosh, why does everyone keep changing their minds? Like, things just kept changing, which was really stressful because you don't know if anything's going to work or not, not having the props in your hands or being on stage.
Right. And working with the other person.
Exactly. So there's all these different levels of just basically stress.
Yeah.
Luckily, me and Leon, we got on really well with each other. There was no tension with us, which I think some other groups there might have been. And we worked on a routine which kept changing because Leon was stuck in Vancouver. One of our props was a maple leaf, or just leaves actually, just a bunch of leaves, and he just picked up two bottles of see, picked up some what was maple syrup in Canada. So we're like, okay, just random. You're just coming, you're brainstorming constantly.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And then you're working on your second routine as well. So it was, I would say it was madness, really. It was absolute madness. And if you were lucky, you might have got 5 minutes on the stage before you performed, if you were lucky.
To rehearse a little bit then.
And you know, there was, everything was built on that stage.
Right.
So, and that was for every group. See, there was really no time. It was kind of like improvised magic, but you're being filmed in front of a national audience and Penn and Teller are there. So, yeah, the stress levels are quite high.
And when they have the second go-round and you're performing against the Wizards, do they have the same requirements? Seems like they have to also work with whatever that is the instrument.
Yes.
And so they have to practice the same thing then, too.
The Wizards actually have it much worse. I thought they had it easier. And I only know this because then I was asked to be a wizard. And I was like, oh, great. That sounds like it's going to be way easier.
But no.
Completely not. Because when you're a contestant, you're only working with one person. So you're only working with your partner's schedule and all that. When you're a wizard, you're in every single episode. Plus, you have to do other bits of magic.
Yes.
And you're now working with four schedules because I'm not only doing a routine with Greg Wilson, I'm also doing a routine with Justin, I'm also doing a routine with Shimshi, so, and the same amount of time. They filmed 6 episodes in 3 days.
Oh, they did? So how many hours a day were you shooting during those 3 days?
I don't know, all day.
You hardly got
to
sleep.
I don't even know, because it was to the point where you're like, I'm too stressed, I just got to, as soon as one thing's done, I got to think about the next routine.
Yeah.
So, I, in my opinion, being a wizard was much more stressful because you're working with even more routines and more people in the same amount of time.
Yeah.
So,
and again, though, that you were having to do the same tricks or using the same props or whatever that the competition was having to come up with. Is that right? I
mean, yeah. It was the same props that the
contestants
had.
So if you had to use a fishing pole, the other guys had to use a fishing pole or something.
Same thing.
And that kind of a
thing.
But in that case, again, that these guys, I mean, that you and Greg Wilson, for an example, when you became then a wizard, that they would, I mean, a wizard being a judge, that you would then have to come up with some sort of an idea to compete against what the other team was trying to do. Is that right?
Yeah, but
and
we
you
never.
Didn't know what they were doing?
We weren't allowed to know anything that the other groups were doing.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever the rules are for like these kind of game shows, the same applied to Wizard Wars. We had no idea. We weren't even allowed to be sometimes in the same room as the other contestants.
Yeah.
Just,
was that right?
Yeah, just because to make everything fair.
You knew who you were competing against, I guess.
Not always.
Together, you didn't know. I mean, well.
Oh, we knew. Oh, when as a contestant, yeah, you knew who you were competing against.
Yeah. Do you remember now who it was that in your episode who you guys were you and Leon
we
competed against?
Competed with against Mark Calabrese and John Stessel from New York.
Okay, and who won that?
Me and Leon.
And then when you compete, what was it that you had to do?
If I can remember, I've blocked it all out. But our first props were a bunch of leaves, balloons, a calculator. There was a leaf blower involved. I think there was a fourth thing that I can't actually remember. But those were our first props. And the second props we had was a fridge, a car, like a toy car.
Mm-hmm.
I can't even remember.
Okay.
A horse's head. How could I forget that? That was horrible.
What did you do with a horse's head?
What can you do with a horse's head? First thing that comes to any magician's mind, which was actually a problem, is we all think the same. So we were like, oh, we'll do a switch. We'll do a body switch with the head, or a costume change. But of course, just because we're magicians, the other groups would think
thing.
The same. So then the consultants would come in like, we got to change this because
they know what the other team's doing.
The consultants would mostly to make sure we weren't doing the same stuff.
Right, one has a variety.
Which, funny enough, a lot of us were going in the same directions because we're working out of the same,
toolbox.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So what me and Leon came up with, we're like, okay, we're not going to do a body switch because that just seems obvious.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of just made a horse appear and disappear on stage with the head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. And did you win then against the Wizards in that?
Do you know what? We lost against the Wizards.
Okay.
I think there was a lot of controversy about us losing. I don't know. I think it was, I'm kind of happy with the loss in a way. I like controversy and I think it just kind of made our episode more like people talked about it more.
You're saying controversy,
because we lost.
You mean just on the forums?
Some people were like, oh no, we should have won. Even when I came back for season two, mm-hmm. Some of the Wizards were like, you guys should have won that episode and all that. And the producers were like, yeah, we looked back at the footage and you should have won that episode. But,
yeah.
I'm not bothered by it, because I think it actually became a good conversation, you know, as to as to just, you know, why we should have won or lost. It didn't really matter to me, because splitting 10 grand and then I got to convert it to British pounds is very much at the end of the day.
Yeah. I wonder in a case like that, that when people do win, this is kind of a little bit off topic, whenever you win a cash prize, if they take the taxes out of that right away. It's kind of like, you know, in Las Vegas, if you win a big amount, that they take the taxes before they give you your winnings.
Well, I don't...
Do you know?
I can't really say, because I didn't win that episode.
Yeah, I just want to generalize.
At the same time, I don't want to say, because I'm not from this country.
Okay. No, I understand.
Yeah.
I just wondered what people do here, just again, kind of off topic a little bit. So, as far as transitioning then to the next season to replace one of the Wizards, how did that come about from moving from a competitor to the...
Yeah, they just called me and was like, okay, we're doing some more episodes. Do you want to come back as a wizard? And because I'd already gone through the trenches and I kind of knew what it was about. I mean, the show, it really was a war. I think everyone walked away with, like, you know, war wounds and scars and stuff.
Yeah.
Just because the nature of the show. And even though it is probably the most stressful thing I've ever put myself through because of the concept and the nature of it, at the end of the day, when, you know, whether your routines were great or not, it didn't matter. At the end of the day, leaving the show and watching all the contestants, and it's so sad because you could say the contestants that lost that didn't make it to round two.
Yeah.
I mean, I saw them creating beautiful pieces of magic that no one will ever get to see, like new magic that no one will see because
it was a one-off.
Yeah, it was a one-off because they didn't get through to the second round. Mm-hmm. So, you know, at the end of the day, the show at the same time, I think, was probably one of the most rewarding experiences I've ever put myself through, because I would have never put myself in that much stress doing improvised magic with someone I don't know. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
So, but knowing that I can get through that, it was very rewarding. And for myself, just now doing my own magic in my own shows, I would have to say I'm a bit more brave.
Did you get to know the other guys who like Shimshi and Gregory pretty well? Because then you were starting to, when you would compete against the winners, I mean, that was something that happened every week then, that you had to practice, and you got to know those guys pretty well because you were with them more often?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think every second of the day we tried to,
hang out.
Well, it wasn't so much hang out, it was more like we were brainstorming constantly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was like every second we had, we'd be like, okay, Shimshi's free, Shimshi, let's run over these lines, what are we going to do with this, do you have this? And then at the same time, we're thinking, okay, what's my routine with Justin?
Right.
Justin, are you free? But now he's working with Shimshi, so it was really difficult.
That's an interesting thing you say, when rehearsing the lines, that was something that, were these scripted as far as whenever that you are performing the illusion, you take the trick, you take the fishing pole or the horse head or whatever it is, and you got an idea, do you actually script that out when you're a competitor as well as a wizard as far as what you're going to be saying, or you just kind of have a general idea and you kind of wing it, since it is a one-off thing?
You know what? I would say it was kind of more of a general idea, but because you're working with another person and there's no time to rehearse anything.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so.
We would kind of... I would say half and half, so we kind of like, okay, this is what I'm going to end.
This,
I'm going to stop. When you hear me say this, that is your cue for this.
Especially if you got another person that you kind of tag team off of.
Exactly, and because none of us work together in our real lives, you know, you kind of had to have it a little bit more scripted so we know when we got to do the next thing.
Right.
Which is hard because there was really no rehearsal time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even me and Justin Flom did this Saran Wrap illusion in the second series, and it was funny because he had the illusion at his house, and I actually was filming him and his wife learning the routine, and it was a potential maybe he'll do it on the show, maybe not. And then the producer's like, oh, we want you and Billy to do it. And I'm like, oh my gosh, but we've never rehearsed this before, and we're gonna do it like, I don't know, in like an hour.
Yeah.
It was funny because then the illusion broke, and we're like, great, we don't have to do it, it's broke. But then they're like, oh wait, Don Wayne's here, he can fix it.
Yeah.
And he did, and now we're gonna do the illusion in 5 minutes, and we've never... Like, literally, we've never really rehearsed it. We just ran through the technical part of it twice before we went on stage in 5 minutes. And most of it was, as far as, you know, what we're saying and stuff, was just completely just improvised.
But I know that it's live. That is, there's an audience out there of, what, about 30 people or so? It looked like kind of a small audience.
I think there may have been maybe 50 people.
50 people. But it is recorded. It's not broadcast live. My point being is that, let's say something would have messed up during that, what horribly wrong or whatever, or didn't work at all. Would they leave that in because they'd say, oh, this is how that sometimes things just don't go right?
No, which was great about the show is that even though, you know, you showed the viewers, the creative process. It never exposed anything as to how things
were
done.
Yeah.
And yeah, there were some effects, I think, in everyone's routine where it wasn't very clean and or things might have been exposed to that audience there. But they, I think they edited the show quite well. Where,
because they had enough camera angles. They
And they didn't want anything to look bad for the magicians and for the show, and they didn't want any exposure, so...
Who was looking after that to make sure there was no exposure? Was that Johnny or Rick or
I don't know whose final decision was, but but everyone who worked on that show, luckily for the most part, everyone had some kind of magical experience or knowledge, so they made sure that that flashed, so we're not going to show that. We'll
that
make
angle.
Sure the effect is still there, but we'll cut it out when it looks really bad.
Right.
So when they edited the show, I was quite pleased to see that pretty much they did the best.
You were satisfied with the product.
Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I know there were some things that could have been shown that would have been disastrous for some routines, but it ended up working out.
Well, as a wizard and as a judge, you were sitting there watching this, and you saw some things. It's like, did you kind of look over at Gregory and say, "Gosh,"
Yeah, but I think I don't know. For myself, I think there was some trust going. I know that they're not going to expose anything bad.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm.
So that was safe.
But you know that
safe.
That particular person or that act, you know, is not going to be as good as what the one you saw.
Some stuff definitely looked better when it, on TV than it did live. But I think that was another great thing about the shows as a viewer, that you're going, well, we know this is happening live in front of an audience and they're being judged in real time, that there is no camera tricks. There can't be any camera tricks.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was a great show for the viewers because it was the first time the viewers could see a little window into what we do as magicians, going, oh wow, isn't that interesting? Two different teams of magicians doing completely different magic with just these props that we as viewers know. We know what a surfboard is. We know what a tea kettle is, and all that kind of stuff. So I think it was very educational to viewers in an entertaining way. And I think it's for myself watching other magic shows on TV. I think Wizard Wars is one of the first shows that kind of gave the viewer that kind of glimpse into what we do.
Into the mind of the magician, basically, kind of a thing.
Which I think is fantastic, because it is very different than other magic shows on television right now.
Yeah. And that ran for just two seasons?
Yeah.
Now, how many shows were in each one? Were there 13 or 8?
I think
many?
It was a total of 12 episodes.
In each season?
No.
Six episodes in each,
yeah.
Okay. And there was a year apart, but were they actually a year apart in filming, or were they closer together?
No, they were closer together. So the first series was filmed, I think, in April, May of 2014. And then the second series was filmed in October of the same year.
Okay. So the network knew that that was something that was,
it was
working.
Yeah,
so we're
going
to do it
again.
It was
very quick. I think by August or September, we knew that we were going to jump into it.
Because it seemed like at first that Sci-Fi Channel was going to be showing this, I believe. And it ended up being on, what was the network? I'd forgotten the network that was USA or... I don't remember the network that was showing over here, but in the first iteration of this, that Rick Lax had said that they were getting ready to let it go, but then they wanted to have somebody else, so they ended up bringing in Penn and Teller because it would give them.
Oh, I see. Yeah,
you know,
I think
more exposure.
I mean, I wasn't really involved.
I
wasn't involved in the concept
early
of the show early
on,
but I know as far as the judges go, I think they went. They were looking for a number of different people. I think Harry Anderson was a potential judge. And Neil Patrick Harris, perhaps, if I recall. Yes, they were looking at a few different people.
I'm sure they were trying to have some sort of, quote, star power in order to bring in the people who wouldn't know you or me as well. Yeah.
Unfortunately, you need some kind of star power, as you say, for television.
Yeah. For television. So it ran then the two seasons, and then tell us from your perspective why that the show was canceled after the second season.
Well, from what I heard from some of the producers, you know, the ratings were fine, they were great, and there was lots of buzz, but I also heard there were some changes at the network, you know, maybe some new people higher up at the top of the channel who just really wanted to change. So, because Wizard Wars was a very new show, a lot of times what happens in television is that, you know, the baby shows, the new shows kind of go, okay, well, we don't need that. We didn't need it before.
Yeah. We just need the filler.
Yeah. Honestly, it's just the nature of television. Really, nothing happens until it's actually on air and you're watching it at home.
Did they feel, I wonder, that they were trying to capture something that was already being done? In other words, that magic was starting to be hot and there was there were other shows that the magicians were in, and then so that network said, well, we need to have our own magic show too.
Do you know what? Honestly, I don't know. No? I think, I think, you know, since Wizard Wars and, of course, Fool Us and all that, magic on television in the United States is becoming more and more popular. Mm-hmm. And I think other channels are seeing that. I mean, Fool Us, their first season was filmed or aired like 4 or 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So it's taken that long for even though it's not in the same country now, it's in the U.S., but it's taken that long for, you know, CW Network in America to go, you know what, let's air this and see what happens. Right. And now they've just finished their second series. But yeah, their first series was 4 or 5 years ago, and maybe the same could happen to Wizard Wars. Maybe another channel picks it up and they go, this is a good thing, but I don't know.
Hopefully so.
Television is weird.
It is kind of strange, and it seems like just over the last couple of years there have been the proliferation of more magic shows, you know, with Masters of Illusion and Penn and Teller Fool Us and the Carbonaro Effect and different kinds of shows that are regularly going on and have been successful. It seems that in other countries, like in England, that they have had magic shows. In Canada, I guess, have they had some shows at all? I don't watch Canadian TV, so.
You don't.
Okay.
No.
Mostly documentaries, I understand. They're big on
documentaries. Yeah, I haven't been in Canada for well over 10 years now, but I know, you know, we mostly have American television.
Okay.
We mostly are, you know, even the shows that might have been made in Canada, everything's from the States.
Seinfeld and everything kind of.
Everything is, yeah. We just watch American television. But I do know there's production companies in Canada and America and all over who are now kind of looking as magic as, oh, this is something we've never done before. Maybe we can do this because it's popular in England or there, okay. You know, which is great for magic. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's also scary because a lot of these television production companies or channels, if they've not made any magic for TV, they have no idea how difficult it is and how different it is and how costly it can be for a number of reasons. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, it's good. The more people see magic, the better, I think.
Right. I would think if it's in the studio, it would be cheaper than going out on the street. Sometimes you might think, well, street magic's not going to cost much, but I was talking with Banachek about producing some of the Chris Angel Mind Freak shows about how it's expensive to try to get the permits or get the streets closed off or to make sure they do this or that or you have the camera set up or the right light, the right time of day and the crew and all the rest that you have. It seems like it would be easier and cheaper in a studio.
Yeah, I don't really know. I think it all really depends on what you're doing. You know, I've also heard, you know, I've done shoots in other countries where, okay, they're just going to send a very small crew with us, and that seems to be cheaper than doing it at home. So it really kind of depends on the nature of the show and what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Are there any other projects or something that you're working on television-wise or what else?
There's a few different things, but nothing that I can really say.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't really talk about what I'm doing unless it's actually happening. And 100%.
Right. Well, that's why I don't.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. No, but yeah, I mean, I'm always working on new ideas and stuff and talking with people, but that's about.
Well, I think that you have to have a lot of balls in the air, certainly, in order to see if something's going to come down, and particularly as it is in television, that very few programs get green-lighted, but you need to keep talking and pitching different ideas.
I mean, I know shows that they've actually filmed and then they never get aired.
Yeah.
That's why I say, you know, for anyone who's interested in doing television or magic on television or whatnot, really, just don't start talking about it until you know it. until it's actually aired on TV.
Yeah, I've heard that before, they have said, okay, well, this is already in the can, it's ready to go, and they're supposed to be releasing it for Thanksgiving or something, and then something happens. And then something happens that it never does get aired. Nothing happens.
You never know.
Yeah, you just don't know what's going to be happening. Well, as far as working on television, have you got any suggestions for making sure that you're working with a camera operator? If you're performing, let's say, on a morning talk show or something to promote something, what kind of recommendations would you have for people working with news or radio television announcers and talk shows and camera operators? What would you suggest?
I would say if you're doing any magic on television, just try to have as much control as possible. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's always best to, you know, if you're doing a spot like at your local news television station or whatnot, I would say always bring a friend who can stand on the other side of the camera. And if you can get any kind of, you know, rehearsal, because you're not in charge of the camera or the editor. And if you don't have an opportunity to be in the editing studio, you want to make sure whatever routines you're picking are flawless and are going to look good for the camera.
Mm-hmm.
Even more specifically, make sure it looks better for the camera than it does for maybe that one person who's standing the side of you, depending on the trick.
No, that's good advice. And I learned that the hard way. That's been almost 30 years ago, and I was doing a cup and ball routine for a morning talk show, and the announcer, the lady I was talking with and showing, was blown away, and she just had a great time. And when you watch that clip later, in hearing her voice, you can see how that she was enjoying it. However, I had not spoken to the camera operator to make sure that they didn't catch the loads. And they were focused on my hands and the cups and not on the two-shot with the two of us talking. And so the camera showed it was a learning exercise. It was a school, basically, when I actually saw what went on air.
Yeah, you want to make sure, I think, especially for like a news thing, let's say, I would always, you know, talk to the camera guy. Always talk to the camera guy.
I've learned that lesson.
If there's more than one camera guy, talk to all of them, especially if they've not filmed magic before.
And the director, technical director.
They will film as if they're a layperson, which probably they are. So they're just going to be looking right at your hands. And, of course, you can't misdirect the camera. So you're better off having a whole wide shot.
Right.
So the viewers can see everything, as opposed to just your hands.
Yeah, that's true. That's my advice that would be for that. And so as we start to kind of wrap up over here, that the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word. So my question is, what is your chi? What is your philosophy of life? What's important to you?
I guess do what you want. Do what you love. Don't listen to anybody, not even your parents.
Good advice there. That certainly that you have chosen your own path. As we started off in talking about being a woman in magic and, you know, following the passion of your heart, you know, basically to do something that you knew that you wanted to do, and still being in theater. It's just a different kind of theater than what you had studied in school.
Yep. Yeah. Just do it. Don't be scared. I think I find most, talking to most magicians, especially those that want to become full-time pros, I mean, there's no other way except for just doing it, diving in and doing it. That's what I did.
Yeah.
And it seems to be working so far.
And what about advice for particularly girls and young girls or other women who may think they'd like to get into magic? Or for parents who might want to encourage their daughters to get involved in magic?
Well, yeah, if there's any young ladies out there who are interested in magic, I've met quite a few, but, you know, it's sad really because I hear young girls who have these stories where they're like, oh, I'm into magic, but I stopped going to the clubs because they're uncomfortable because they're the only girl there. Do you know what? I would probably say no. I would say, you know, if you're a magician, young or old, in a magic club and there happens to be that one girl there or two, I wouldn't give them the attention that we do give them. Because it's intimidating, and they're put on the spot, and they're not ready. You know, if you're a 12-year-old kid who's just got into magic, and you go to the club, and everyone's just gonna look at you and focus on you, it might shy you away from it. And I think just treat them like they're just magicians, as opposed to female magician.
Yeah, yeah. Again, that is just a generic magician, and
yeah. But I mean, you know, it's
asexual.
It is just one of those things. Now that I know how rare it is, if I see, you know, a girl doing magic, I see it. I'm like, wow, that is so hot. That is so rare. But it is one of those things where if you're a girl in magic, you can be put in the spotlight way too soon than you should be.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, great. Thank you very much. I appreciate you being our guest.
Thank you for having me.
All right. For the Magic Word Podcast, that was Billy Kidd, and this is Scotty out. Wow, what a thoroughly delightful chat that was. I learned a lot, and we kind of went down some interesting directions there with some great stories and good feedback that enlightened me on some things, and I hope that you feel the same way. Well, this next week we're going to be going again in a different direction. We will have the editor and publisher of Magic Magazine and the organizer of Magic Live, Stan Allen. You want to be sure and tune in for that one. And again, that's going to be just this next week here on the MagicWordPodcast.com. Until then, stay well, get booked, and be an encourager, not a discourager. This is Scotty out.